Welcome to Does the Team Think with Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And here's a question from Mr. Robin Kermode. Mr. Kermode, what's your question, please?
Can the members of the team recall their favourite sweets as children? And now they are grown up and wealthy, do they buy them in large quantities?
Can the members of the team recall their favourite sweets as children? And now that they're grown up and wealthy, do they buy them in large quantities?
I do recall, actually vividly, because I still eat them. I'm very fond of gobstoppers.
I wish you'd use one now.
That's very charming, Mr. Edwards. It's the first utterance I've made on this programme, which, as I've told the audience earlier, is going to be full of verbal pyrotechnics.
Oh, fireworks, yes. Yes. Great.
But a gobstopper was one of those wonderful sweets which lingered for so long.
And changed colour, didn't it?
Changed colour, yeah. And gradually got smaller, and in the middle was the reward, a little lump of licorice.
All
I can remember
sweets.
When I was so young that I had a job to get it in.
Oh, really?
And then you kept taking it out because it changed colour, didn't you?
Well, you had to keep taking it out to see if it had changed colour. Yes, of course you did.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. I remember
Jim,
in pantomime, you use that gag where we've all done it, playing buttons, you know. And you're with the kitchen scene with Cinders, that lovely moment when you say, well, you are Cinders, that's all I've got. And you give her this sweet. And she said, oh, lovely, she said. It was like a sort of aniseed ball, you know. She said, I always liked pink sweets. And then I used to say, yes, it was white when I started it.
Cyril.
When I was at kindergarten, you know, boys and girls together, seven boys and about a million girls, we used to have a thing called fairy whispers.
You didn't.
In Liverpool, they used to call them Cupid's whispers.
Oh, really?
You call them fairy whispers.
Fairy whispers.
Oh, you came from a funny part of the country. But I personally used to love
coffee. He comes from Liverpool and he says, I come from a funny part of the country.
No, I used to like toffee, but now I'm frightened to eat toffee in case I pull my tooth out. That's the one that keeps all the others in, you know.
Well, I went to see my dentist the other day. He said, my teeth are fine, but the gums have got to come out.
Oh.
I can't eat sweets anyway because although you may not believe this, sweet things do not appeal to me. In any case, they make you fat. So I've lately been on a diet which has nothing to do with sweets. It's called the onion diet. You eat nothing else but onions. And in 4 weeks, I've lost 4 pounds and 23 friends.
Talking of, I've already mentioned Liverpool. Ted will bear me out in this. We had some very funny sweets in Liverpool. We had sticky lice.
That's, do you remember that? Yes, I do. It was a root.
You don't know what that is, do you? Sticky
no,
lice.
Sticky lice.
It was a licorice root.
We had locust beans.
Come on, tell us what sticky lice is.
Well,
it's
a licorice root.
It's the root of the, you know, licorice.
Yes.
Well, licorice is made from the root of
plant.
That's right.
And they used to, in Liverpool, they couldn't be bothered making it into licorice all sorts. They sold you the root.
Oh, I see. Now, I know exactly what this is, speaking as a southerner. We have licorice laces, don't
That's
we?
It, brave.
Well, in Liverpool, they call them licorice lices.
Mr. Kermode, if you had a sweet shop, what sort of sweets would you recommend that the team would buy, should buy from you?
Two chairs and a divan, I suppose.
Don't be put off, Mr. Kermode.
No, I'm not. Jimmy Edwards might buy, as you said earlier, a large gobstopper, where Arthur Askey might buy a tiny aniseed ball. Ted Ray might buy a chocolate raisin. And Cyril Fletcher, being obviously sweet and gentle in nature, would have a peppermint cream, I think.
Ah! I like it.
I think Arthur surely would have hundreds and thousands, those tiny
That's
little
right.
things that you sprinkle.
I used to sing that, and please pick them out, all white. The real classic story of about the sweet shop is the three kids who went in. And the first kid said, I want a pennyworth of licorice all sorts.
I want a pennyworth of licorice all sorts.
Said the ghost.
Keep that child quiet, please.
Anyway, the licorice all sorts were on the top shelf. So the shopkeeper went and got a ladder, went to the top shelf, brought down the licorice all sorts, served out a pennyworth, gave the boy, took the penny, he took the sweets away, put the ladder back, put the thing on top, and said to the second boy, what do you want? He said, I want a pennyworth of licorice all sorts.
I want a pennyworth of licorice all sorts.
Keep that child quiet, please.
So he went up the ladder again, got the bottle, brought it down, weighed out a pennyworth of licorice all sorts, gave the boy the licorice all sorts, took the penny, and he looked at this fellow. He said, I suppose you want a penny of licorice all sorts too. The other kid said, no, I don't. He said, okay. So he got the ladder, put the bottle on top shelf, came down and go, he put the ladder away, and he said to the third kid, well, what is it you want? He said, I want a heap of the licorice all sorts.
Thank you very much, Demon. Thank you, Mr. Kermode. Thank you very much. And now here is Mrs. Joan Taylor to put her question to you. Mrs. Taylor.
Have the members of the team ever had to cope with their own laundry? And what is the most peculiar garment they ever had to wash?
Have the members of the team ever had to cope with their own laundry? And what is the most peculiar garment they've ever had to wash?
Well, you know something, nowadays it's considered the thing to do, cope with your own laundry. You go into any of these big hotels and you find over the bath the two or three plastic hangers. And they are for drip-dry shirts. And often these businessmen, they go away with one shirt.
Do you know, I've wondered for ages what those things hanging up over the bath. I've tried swinging from them and... Is that what they're for, shirts?
Of course they are. You know you're being ridiculous.
No, they always break when I catch on.
Well, silly man.
I thought they were for pulling yourself up out of the bath.
No.
Oh, I must go to another hotel and my shirts aren't drip dry.
Well, I used to work for drip. I used to work for the Eagle Laundry, but it was no future in washing eagles.
Hearing people talk about washing, because it's naturally a thing that I would never allow myself to do.
Wash?
The servants.
Of course you would wash.
I have my servants
wash. You know perfectly well that grime doesn't pay.
What are smalls? I've heard people say they wash...
Anything I wear.
Every time he pulls his socks up, he blindfolds himself.
I had a maiden auntie, used to send her drawers to the laundry, but she always put them on the list as sitting room curtains.
Well, I know that Tessie O'Shea sent a nightdress to the laundry and they sent it back with a note saying they don't wash tents.
But I had an aunt who used to wear Axminster cami box.
There was an old double axe on the halls, Ted will remember them, and their big punchline at the end was about a laundry that was situated next to an undertaker's.
That's
and
right.
The payoff line was, yeah, one stiffens the collars and the other collars the stiffens.
Actually, you know, they're selling some marvellous washing powder these days. It's so sexy, isn't it? My wife tried some the other day. She put it in the washing machine, and my pyjamas and her nightie came out with their arms around each other.
slogan for a nappy service. Slogan for a nappy service. Rock a dry baby.
I was looking at some people. You go to a laundry and you put in that machine. I stayed with some people the other day, had one of those machines.
Yes.
And it all goes round and round.
Yeah.
And I sat in front of it for hours. Oh, look, there's a sock. Wah!
Yes.
It's more
he only
fun
wears one sock, you know.
You see better programmes there than you do on TV.
I
see.
Mac,
I'll tell you one thing. I was on the bill once with a comic and they were notoriously physically dirty men.
Name them.
Well, I can't mention. All the music halls are closed. They're
That's
all
right.
Dead anyway. This fella came in and he said, Billy Camp. This was I'm giving it away now. That was his name. Billy Camp, he said, yeah. He said, your laundry's back. He said, good. He said, yes, they've refused it.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Joan Taylor. Team, this question is put to you by Mr. Gerald Birchall. This is his question.
If, in due course, each member of the team finds himself in heaven, what instrument would he like to play and how will he pass the time?
If, in due course, each member of the team finds himself in heaven, what instrument would they like to play and how would he pass the time?
I think we'll all be there, but I think when you read the Holy Book, the only thing there is are harps. When you go to heaven, you must play a harp. It looks as if you're forced to, but I think when we four get up there, Jimmy will be sitting on the cloud playing the euphonium, Ted on the fiddle, and me on the piano, and Siddle on the guitar.
But Arthur, I can't play the guitar.
Well, you've got the pluck.
I can't play the guitar.
Well, it's so easy. You've only got those three chords. Anyone can do that.
I mean,
all musicians have their girlfriends, but guitar players have their pick.
I think I'd like to play golf up there if I went upstairs into heaven. Because Walter Hagen once said there's no bunkers in the sky, which I thought was rather nice.
Very nice. Mr. Birchall, if you were a conductor and had to conduct these gentlemen in heaven, which obviously you're going to do, what would your orchestra consist of if these were the four gentlemen who comprised it?
Well, we know Mr. Andrews is without peer on the euphonium.
Without peer, thank you. Peerless.
Well, that comes later.
he's
had a few pints.
He sometimes has played on the Brighton Pier, but...
Anyway, I'd leave him to blow his own trumpet.
He does.
Well done. That's only me. There's three others to go.
Is it anything like a sack butt?
No, it's
my
euphonium.
Mr. Birchall still has some more instruments for you.
Oh, yes, please.
Mr. Ray, I would give a violin without any strings.
Oh, how kind.
And see show them I've got the guts.
And You've ruined my line for me now.
Yeah, you
know. He often does.
He ruins mine, I'll tell you that.
It must be these pills. I must stop taking
these
pills.
Yeah, that's right.
Mr. Fletcher has a poetic bent.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, is he? I mean,
seen him tying his boots up, have you?
Bent.
And so, for him, what a hoot to toot on the flute or the lute to boot.
And now the end is near.
Mr. Askey has entertained me all my life. Therefore, he must be preserved, looked after, and built up. So what about a piano for tea?
For tea? Ah. Yeah, piano for tea. The great thing about getting up there, when we eventually arrive there, we meet all those great composers like Tchaikovsky and Chopin, Debussy, he wrote Kitten on the Keys, you know, and Schubert. And we'd help him, to finish his unfinished symphony, which, as you know, went ba 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 ba. He couldn't think of the end, so we could put it for him, and it would go lump da 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 da. Bum, bum.
So this child put his head round the grocer's door and says, got any broken biscuits? He said, yes. He says, clumsy, aren't you?
And was that you, Bert?
Well, that was in the first question, but I couldn't get it in.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Birchall. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, an actress who starred in many top British films and, of course, in the great London stage success No Sex, Please, We're British. Ladies and gentlemen, your applause, please, for Jean Kent. Welcome to the programme, Jean. Make yourself as comfortable as possible and put your question, please.
Now, is it fair to accuse the British of not being sexy, and with which famous woman of British history would the team most like an evening out?
Is it fair to accuse the British of not being sexy, and with which famous woman of British history would the team most like an evening out?
I will settle for Cleopatra, provided she's played by Elizabeth.
She's not British!
Provided she's played by Elizabeth Taylor.
No, she's British.
Yes.
I'd go for Grace Darling. She's the only woman who ever pushed the boat out.
Mary, Queen of Scots, who was
She was
hated.
Reputed to be beautiful.
That's what I mean.
Now, Boadicea Elizabeth, would have slain you.
Boadicea, she couldn't even drive properly. Have you seen that statue? She's got her left hand out and turning right.
Ah, she's got the size there. She'll get through.
And she'd look at me and she'd say, I'd say, Boa, what's this here? Yeah. Mary, Queen of Scots, would definitely be my number one choice because she was so beautiful that the reigning Queen, Elizabeth, had her executed. So she must have been pretty good.
What about the first part of the question? Do you think it's fair to accuse the British of not being sexy?
Well, so when you compare this to the Latin types, for instance, you know, I went to Rome, you know, my wife and I, and, you know, these men, they will flagrantly go along pinching bottoms.
Oh, black and blue.
So what? I've had my bottom pinched in England.
Did you get it back?
Unfortunately, yes, I still have it with me.
I know the most sexy woman in British history, Lady Godiva.
That's right, and they were all shouting away for our side, weren't they?
Nobody knew whether Lady Godiva was sexy or not except the horse. He got a fair idea.
Oh, Peeping Tom had a good idea.
Mark, you don't forget that she rode without a saddle.
I know, and without a tire.
I'd like to give you a story. I'd like to tell you a story about typical English reserve. There's this chap in a shop, you see, and the assistant, lady assistant, very beautiful, comes across and says, what is your desire? And he says, my desire, madam, is to cover you with kisses. But all I've come in for is a pair of socks.
Jean Kent, since you posed this question, I imagine that the team would like me to ask you who you consider to be the most sexy man in English history.
Oh, dear, now you've really... Charles II, I think.
Charles II?
Yes, I've always had a bit of a yen for Charles.
Or for long hair.
He doesn't take Japanese money.
Well, he didn't wear his...
They'll soon be making...
Ah, dear.
If you know the Japanese are making everything, they'll soon be making kings and queens as well, you know.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, they make trombones, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah, but what about Richard Coeur de Lion? The only difficult thing, he was always in a suit of armour, so you could never prove whether he was a man or not. Yeah. It was very embarrassing.
Yes, like the Black Prince.
And they weren't
worried about him.
And they were very jealous, too, when they went on those crusades, you know. They made sure that those wives of theirs had chastity belts. Clunk, click, every trip.
Well, you know, in our business, we mix with a lot of cute and sexy girls, and there was some of these girls went to give an army show out in the wild summer, give the fellows, cheer them up a bit, and they did a very good show for them. When they finished, the colonel said to them, "Would you girls like to mess with the officers or the other ranks?" And that girl said, "It doesn't matter, but we've got to eat something first."
I'm sorry to bring my wife into this again.
Not
What's
Betty.
Her name?
No,
yes,
no.
Yes, 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 but of course I've only got the one. Betty, yes. She likes it rather...
That's a novelty, isn't it?
Here's
a novelty.
There you
in bed, Betty likes to have plenty of air. You see, she has the windows
wide open. Give her a pump and tell her to get on with it.
And I sometimes arrive... I'm not taking any notice of this thought. I sometimes...
Give her a pump and she's gone with the wind.
Meet my seconds at dawn, Ray. Sometimes I arrive home late at night from doing a cabaret or something, and I shut the windows up, you see, and this stifles poor Betty, so she has to go and sleep in the dressing room. Well, this happened many years ago, and Jill came, my daughter, she came and discovered Betty in the dressing room, and this rather upset her. And she told the nanny at breakfast that Mummy had to sleep in the dressing room last night because Daddy made it too hot for her in bed.
Thank you very much, Timon. Thank you, Jean Kent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Team, Mr. Bob Bell has a question for you. Here it is.
Does the team think that they would succeed as sales representatives? And what would each be able to sell best?
Does the team think that they would succeed as sales representatives? And what would each think they could sell best?
Well, I tried to sell dictionaries once, and a woman brought one back, and she said, "I don't want this. I'll never use all those words."
So she made you eat them.
I mean, the criterion, I believe, is this open? I'm such a good salesman that I could sell a refrigerator to an Eskimo.
Yes, that's good. I think we've got the gift of the gab, but we're bound to make good sales.
Of course we are. The only trouble with me, I can't reach the knockers. I mean the door knockers, I beg your pardon.
I would like to sell perfume, and the expensive one would be called Surrender, and the cheap one would be called Negotiate.
You're obviously a salesman, Mr. Bell, aren't you?
Yes.
You're a salesman.
Well, I'd be a carpet salesman, because I'd be very good, because they always say about the pile on the carpet, it's ankle deep. Well, I could display a carpet, and I'd be knee-deep.
Actors make very good salesmen, really. I went past a complaints department of a big store the other day, and the phone rang, and this chap answered the phone, and he said, "Hello," and then he put his hand over the mouthpiece, and he turned to the other chaps in the store and said, "Who wants to be the manager today?"
I went to the complaints department in the big store the other day and said, "Oh, I've got this little pain in my left leg."
Oh.
And they said, "Well, it was a complaint, you see."
Yeah, there were two salesmen on the train. One was a very old, experienced salesman. The other was a young fellow, wet behind the ears, just starting. And there was a young fellow sitting there with a big bunch of flowers, big box of chocolates, and the old salesman said, "Going home?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "How long have you been married, son?" He says, "Only 4 weeks." And he said, "Have you phoned your wife to tell her you're coming?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "You shouldn't do that. I've had a lot more experience than you." He says, "If I'm coming home on Thursday," he says, "I come home on Wednesday. I come out of the station, I don't buy flowers or chocolates, but I go into a sports shop and buy a baseball bat. And I go home to my house, ring the front door bell, and rush around the back, and I haven't missed one in 20 years.
Team,
dear.
Team, since you haven't answered the second part of the question, which is what would you best be able to sell, perhaps we could ask Mr. Bell what he thinks you might best be able to sell. What do you think, Mr. Bell?
Well, Arthur Askey, I think, is a tailor-made job for him, miniskirts.
Lovely. You mean as a model?
You mean his catchphrase would be, "Now you see it, now you don't"?
What do you travel in anyway, Mr.
Jimmy?
Bell?
Well, I was going to say the same to Dinger here. What does Dinger sell?
Yeah, I'm in menswear.
You're... Ah, show us. I'd sooner see you in ladies' wear.
When you say men, there's another one, wonderful trade expression, men swear. Well, of course we all swear, we know that. But what sort of, top, bottom or underneath?
No, men's evening wear.
Evening wear?
Ah, that's different. I thought you were talking about those jockey shorts, because they don't half make your eyes water.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you. Now, Mrs. Sheila Akers has a question for you, team. Mrs. Akers, welcome to the programme. Your question, please.
How did each member of the team choose the name of his house? Or, if already named, what would he have chosen? And why?
And how did each member of the team choose the name of his house? Or, if already named, what would he have chosen? And why?
I've always lived in flats. But if I had a house, obviously what I'd call it, Short House.
Ted Ray.
Well, when I moved into my present abode, the gentleman who previous occupied had a name there, and the first thing I did was take it down, because it had nothing to do with me.
Took the house down?
No, the nameplate. Yeah. It took it down, you see, because it had nothing to do with me. It may have been sentimental for this chap, but I had a plate made on the reverse side of his copper plate on this little shingle, and I put 30. And the very next morning, I came down and somebody had put an S in it and made it thirsty. And I thought Jimmy Edwards will do anything to get a laugh.
Jimmy.
That's true, though.
Well, I think it's very confusing for a postman, particularly to call a house by any name at all. It's irritating for them, and numbers suffice quite well. I've never had to name a house.
What's your farm called, Jim?
I'm not going to tell you.
Come on.
The Muck Heap.
The Ordnance Survey.
The horses walk in and out ad lib.
And I'll tell you another
thing.
You ever
seen a man rake the carpet every morning?
They have coach trips from Eastbourne. Come and see Jim Edwards' house.
Yeah, and the fellow stops outside with the microphone and says, this is where Jimmy Edwards is, and we throw manure at them.
That's right. Yeah.
It's free. It's free.
Yes, it's all free.
A lot of fellows in our business, in any business, they flatter their wives by calling the house after their wives' names. Like, dear old George Formby, he moved about 84 times, but his house was always called Beryl Dean. With Siddle, it would be Betty Dean.
It's not Betty
Dean. With Jimmy, it'd be Nellie Dean.
With Ted, that was the gag I was coming for. But 3 years
I've done it again.
So this boy went into the grocer's shop and said, got any broken biscuits?
The fellow lives down our road. He used to be a very well-known thief. Mind you, he did his porridge, he did his time, and he's gone straight, and his house is called Dunrobin.
I'll tell you a funny thing. In suburbia today, it's most odd.
What kind of a country is that?
Well, it's in lots of countries, actually, suburbia. And they will bulldoze all the trees down, won't they? And then the houses are called the Cedars or the Limes. I thought it was just a satirical point that we might be amused
What's
at.
The funniest name you've ever seen on
well,
any
Well, the
house?
First I ever saw was Ers and Mine. E-R-Z, etc. Ers and Mine. That's an obviously concocted name. And if you can imagine, in
I
the
think
old
it's
days...
a disease.
When you... You've got ointment on it. When in the old days, you can imagine when people couldn't read, they used to put up signs like St. George and the Dragon. They'd put a St. George and a Dragon for the pub, and they'd say, but can you imagine what sign they'd put up for Ers and Mine? Be a very funny picture, wouldn't it?
Could have saved themselves a lot of paint and called it ours. But they had a song years ago about a place called Imazaz. You remember that? Imazaz. And it finished up. Well, you remember the song, Arthur.
Go on, 2, 3.
Well, there's something going back to Imazaz. And something never.
Imazaz, the pub next door.
Imazaz, the pub next door. And there's a place down our road called Cloisters, because it's close to the post office and close to the pubs and close to the church.
Mrs. Akers.
Bring Mrs. Murgatroyd in.
Mrs. Akers, do you have a name to your house? Do you live in a house?
Yes, I live in a house.
What's it called?
It's called Camelot.
Why?
My husband's name is Arthur. He'll king never be a king, and he'll never have a castle. So we thought it was rather a suitable... Oh,
you've always looked upon your husband as a king, haven't you?
Yes.
I was there the night you crowned him.
I was going to say, madam, what a defeatist attitude. He'll never become a king. Keep hoping. He himself must be about number 28 million in the line to the throne. There's always a chance the others will be wiped out.
Yeah.
What a ridiculous thing. My husband will never be a king.
Yeah.
It means you'll never be a queen. Well, you should be glad of that.
Thank you very much, team. And there, I'm afraid we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askin, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners, and, of course, to our special guest, Gene Kent. This is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.